the Totally Mental Podcast, episode number 2. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Totally Mental Show. My name is Zach Erickson, and you're listening to the podcast dedicated to the pursuit of a healthy brain and a healthy life. Happy life. Wow, botching the tagline on the first episode that it exists. Congratulations, Zach. That's why we call it beta. This is beta episode number 2. And, of course, basically, like I said at the beginning, this is, you know, show about mental health, being happy, having a good, healthy brain in between your ears, and basically just talking about things that help us overcome the challenging parts, breaking down some barriers and some stigmas there. We're going to talk about that today. In fact, this episode, we'll be talking about how to talk about mental health. I think it's a really important topic, and it's something that we really, in starting this show, it's a really difficult sort of topic, because how do you talk about something that is so difficult to talk about, right? Mental health is, am I coming in? Am I loud enough for you people? Let me look. Yeah, looks good. It seems like, you know, mental health is really difficult to talk about. How do you, and so in this episode, I'll be talking about how to talk about mental health. And honestly, starting out doing this podcast, like I said, it's kind of a daunting idea, right? To talk about mental health on a weekly basis. It can be a really heavy topic. It can be a really, a really intimidating topic to talk about. So I did a little research this week just to kind of help me get my bearings. And I found this great article that I'm going to link to in the show notes. You can head over to Zach Erickson. That's ZACERICKSON. ZachErickson.com/TM002. That's ZachErickson.com/TM002. And the reason that I am putting that up there is so that you're able to go over there and find the, we'll have a link to the show notes there. But this article that I found on TED.com called How Should We Talk About Mental Health? And I can't think of a better thing to do to start off this show than to just basically go through point by point for this article. Now it's difficult. It's kind of a weird idea to just decide that I'm going to go through somebody else's material, which is kind of a weird thing, but honestly, it was that good. And I'm going to give credit where credit's due here. And just, it's a great article. I definitely think you should read it. And you know what? That's what we're going to do. It's written by Tu Huang Ha. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, but it's again, great article. They've done some great research here. And I just want to go through point by point for each thing. It goes through 10 major points on what we can do to appropriately discuss mental health. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to read through it and we're going to discuss it a little bit, and you'll get my thoughts along the way, which I think hopefully that'll work. Again, as you're going through this, if you have any thoughts, you can, of course, send me messages on Twitter. That's at Zach Erickson, or you can go over to ZachErickson.com/contact and send me a note about your thoughts on this episode. So that would be awesome as we're kind of trying to figure out what this show is going to be. And if it's meeting the needs of the people, you, the listener, because that's ultimately what I want, right? I want to be able to go through this show and talk about things that are important to you, the listeners, right, to you guys, and be able to do the back and forth there. As well, just maybe as another little piece of personal backstory, I kind of mentioned this on the last episode, but actually, you know what, I'll save it, we'll get into it, but this is mental health is an important topic for me personally, not only because I'm getting into that profession, into that field, but also for more personal reasons, and I'll get into that. So, first off, again, going through 10 things that we can do to start off, to talk about mental health. The first one is end the stigma. And, it says easier said than done, of course. Andrew Solomon, a journalist, says that people still think that it's shameful to have a mental illness, right? And we see this all the time, right? This idea that that you can't talk about having a mental illness. I know, you know, I'll just, this will give context through the whole thing, but I personally have ADHD. It's attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. I'm going to spend the entire episode next week talking about what it's like to have ADHD and just sort of, you know, sort of my overall thoughts on having ADHD, how that affects my everyday life, how it affects my interactions with other people, how it affects interactions with people with my job, how it interacts, how that has affected my schooling in the past, all those sorts of things. I'm going to at least try and cover as many of those different topics as I can next week. But the thing is, that's really important, is that in having ADHD in particular, for me, that is a disorder that is really difficult for people to wrap their minds around, right? If somebody's got a broken arm, it's really easy to see, oh, he's got a broken arm, or he's got a bum knee or anything like that. It's really easy to say, oh, okay, well, I can see what's wrong with you there, because you have this bum knee or whatever sort of physical ailment. But it's a lot harder to be able to look at somebody and say, oh, well, they have ADHD. That's why he is so disorganized, right? And so for somebody, for me personally, a lot of times what I find is that I really am hesitant about talking about it, because I don't want people to think that that means that I'm lazy, or that means I'm disorganized, or that means I'm whatever. I don't like talking about it, right? And so this idea of ending the stigma, we need to get this idea that it's shameful, or that it's bad, or that it's wrong to have a mental illness. That is not something that we should be spending any time or energy talking about. It's not to thinking about. We need to end that stigma entirely. It is completely counterproductive. Feeling miserable could in fact be seen as part of you, or an extension of your social world. This is from that article from Vikram Patel. And applying a biomedical label is not always something that everyone with depression, for example, is comfortable with either. So banishing the stigma attached to mental health issues can go a long way to facilitating genuine, useful discussions. So, you know, this idea that people are uncomfortable with labels, they're uncomfortable with, you know, the idea that there is some sort of, you know, biomedical, you know, literally the chemicals, there's a chemical imbalance in my brain. There is a neurological difference in how my brain is wired versus how a quote unquote neurotypical, right? Somebody who does not have ADHD, you know, there's a difference between the way that my brain is wired and the way somebody else's is. And of course, everybody's are wired differently, but in particular, there are things that my brain does really well and some that it does not do very well at all, right? And that's okay. But, you know, breaking down that stigma is super important and will be really beneficial in carrying the conversation forward. And I think that's really important for me personally as well, ending the stigma. I had this great interaction with a young man. I can't even remember what happened. Oh, okay. I was interacting with somebody who had reached out to me after I was featured on the news for winning an ADHD scholarship. And, you know, it was really interesting to interact with him. I met him at the mall and was kind of, you know, he was going through a rough time, and he just kind of reached out and wanted to chat. And I was like, well, all right, whatever, sure. So I went and met with him, and he was going through some really difficult times and, you know, had made some pretty questionable decisions in his life. And I was just like, you know what? It's okay. It's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to be struggling. Everybody struggles, and I you know, sympathize with him, but I said, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to struggle, you know, like just keep at it and, you know, try and stay positive and work towards your strengths. And, you know, just tried to give him a little bit of a pep talk. I really didn't know what else to do, honestly. Part of the reason why I am going into counseling psychology is because I tend to have a lot of these sorts of interactions and I really want to help. And I'm just like, sure wish I knew what to do other than just to, you know, validate your feelings and, you know, normalize this situation as much as I can and just tell you that you're still an awesome person, you know. And I think that is 90% of it. But anyway, that's number one, ending the stigma. Number two, avoid correlations between criminality and mental illness. So people are too quick to dole out judgments on people who experience mental health problems, grouping them together when isolated incidents of violence or crime occur. So, for example, you get a major incident like Columbine or Virginia Tech, and the media asks, why didn't people know he was bipolar? Was he schizophrenic? From there, some people think, well, everybody with a bipolar disease is likely to go out and shoot somebody, right? And it's really important that correlation, yes, there may be a correlation between mental illness and violence, right? Between mental illness and criminal activity, but it's really, really important that when we talk about things like that, that we realize just because somebody who was violent had mental illness does not mean that all people with mental illness commit violent acts. That is so important that we keep that in mind as we communicate and we talk about mental illness. Yes, it may be, you know, it may be a thing there, but we need to avoid those correlations as much as possible. And we need to obviously recognize that there is no causation in that. Just because that person had bipolar, and had committed some sort of a crime does not necessarily mean that all people, that it was because of his bipolar disorder that he committed a crime. Does that make sense? That it does not necessarily mean, that there are lots of other factors at play here. And it's important that we really keep in mind that try and separate those two as much as possible in our heads, I guess, and try and reduce that fear in the general public and in you, the listeners, for me, going through each of these points, thinking, how can I apply these to this podcast, avoiding the correlation between criminality and mental illness. Mental illness is not something that is going to result in a crime. Right? Just because you have mental illness, and I think this is really important, and I'm sure it's a theme we'll come back to again and again and again, is just because you have a mental illness does not mean you have lost any control in your life long term. Now, short term, I want to hesitate, and I think that it's a really important thing. And frankly, it's kind of a difficult topic to talk about, and I'm not entirely confident on it, but I'm going to write it down. This is live on the air, folks, because this probably won't be the only time I do this, too. Where's a piece of paper? Right? This idea that what is your idea of free will, for example, or your idea of your ability to choose? What is your ability to choose when you have mental illness? I think that's an important topic to come back to. Yeah, cool. All right, well, this is me rolling with it. If any of you have any thoughts on that, cool. Now, of course, I need to say this as well, because I don't know if I made it clear. I am not a registered psychologist. I am not a therapist. This is not a replacement for therapy. And maybe I should be putting some sort of a disclaimer at the beginning of the show, saying that. But I am not a registered psychologist. This is me and you just exploring these topics together. One day, I probably will be a registered psychologist, but that's a few years down the road. And in the meantime, this is me and you exploring these topics together. So, very cool, and I'm excited to continue on with that. So, number two, of course, number one was end the stigma. Number two, avoid correlations between criminality and mental illness. Number three, but do correlate between mental illness and suicide. This is really, really important as well. Just as we kind of overestimate how important mental illness is in the criminal acts, we tend to underestimate the importance of mental illness in suicide statistics. According to the National Institute for Mental Health, 90% of people who die by suicide have depression or other mental disorders or substance abuse disorders in conjunction with other mental disorders. We don't give this link its due. So there are so many people who take their own lives, and it's such a tragedy. Suicide is such a tragic, terrible thing that we continue to struggle with over and over again. I actually teach the suicide prevention course at my work, and it's something that's, suicide is such a terrible thing, and mental illness is such a high contributor to that, right? It's such a high risk factor, as well. You know, just as the association between mental illness, this is Solomon again, just as the association between mental illness and crime is too strong, the connection between mental illness and suicide is too weak. I feel like what I constantly read in the articles is so-and-so killed himself because his business had gone bankrupt and his wife had left him. I think, okay, those were the triggering circumstances, but he killed himself because he suffered from a mental illness that drove him to do so. He was terribly depressed. And I think that that is so important that we, you know, that we're able to look at, you know, and realize that that is a very real risk in a lot of people who have mental illness. And it's important for us to be able to look at that and see it for what it is, right? And realize that mental illness is a real thing that has real ramifications. And if we're not doing what we can to, you know, to help those people and lift them up and, you know, dust them off and, you know, put an arm around them and just do what we can to say, I care about you. I am willing to push on with you and to support you. And I am here to weep with you and all of those sorts of things. So important that we're willing to do that and that we recognize that. Suicide is such a difficult thing for people to talk about. And I think that we need to do more talking, right? I absolutely think we need to be talking about it more and helping people more with that. So number three, increase our awareness of the correlation between mental illness and suicide. Number four, avoid words like crazy or psycho. This is so, I'm going to say this every time, but this one is so important, right? Yeah. Like, we don't understand the strength of our own language when we talk about, you know, when we talk about mental illness. Not surprisingly, just about all mental health experts we consulted with were quick to decry playground slang like schizo, crazy, loony, or nutter, stigmatizing words that become embedded in people's minds from a young age. It's so important that we do that and that we're aware of how we're discussing things and that we're not using those degrading sort of words. And even, you know, even just being aware of how we're using the actual terms as well, right? Like, oh man, I'm feeling pretty OCD today, or oh, I'm feeling so schizophrenic or bipolar or whatever, right? Like, there are people out there, you know, it kind of bugs me, frankly, and this is just me, and maybe other people don't, and I know that people are kind of, people are unaware of, you know, the realism of ADHD, but it kind of bugs me when people are like, oh man, I'm feeling really ADD today. I was like, are you really? Because I don't think you understand what life is like with ADD. You know? So, not that I particularly care. You know, it kind of rubs me the wrong way, but I give people a pass. I mean, whatever. It is what it is, and it's not like they meant anything by it. So, anyway, that's number four, is just being aware of our language. Avoid words like crazy or psycho, and I just add on to there, just be aware of the language that you're using surrounding mental illness. Number five, this one I feel really strongly about, very clearly, it's probably already very clear. If you feel comfortable talking about your own experience with mental health, by all means do so. Self-advocacy can be very powerful. It reaches people who are going through similar experiences as well as the general public. So it's so important. I mean, one of the greatest people that I have seen and the person who's helped me more than just about anybody to understand what autism is like is Temple Grandin. And if you are not aware of who Temple Grandin is, obviously there was the movie. I haven't seen the movie yet, although I have watched her TED Talks. I have seen, you know, her speak. And she is such a powerful speaker, you know, like a TED Talk and things like that. And I'm so grateful for her willingness to, you know, to go out into the spotlight and talk about what it's like to have autism. You know, and that's kind of what I hope to be able to accomplish as well with having ADHD, is to just come out and just be like, hey, I'm still a normal dude. I still talk about, you know, other things. You know, I have a podcast about Nintendo, and I have a family, and I'm still a normal guy, but I have this mental disorder that is challenging for me, and lots of other people are also challenged by it, and let's just have a discussion about that. Let's just talk about that. You know, Solomon believes that people are equipped to share their experiences. If they are, they should do so. He said, one of the most moving letters I ever received in a way was one that was only a sentence long, and it came from someone who didn't sign his name. Pardon me. He just wrote me a postcard and said, I was going to kill myself, but I read your book and changed my mind. And really, I thought, okay, if nobody else ever reads anything I've written, I've done some good things in the world. So, man, that's so good, right? Like, he writes this book, and I'm not sure of who this Solomon guy is. Maybe I need to read into him more. Obviously, that's something I should probably look into. But, right? Like, wow. Writes this book about depression and suicide, and somebody just writes him back and says, I was going to kill myself, but I didn't because I read your book. That is so cool, right? Think about, if you have mental illness, think about the people out there who are not strong enough yet to face their mental illness, but hearing your story, they would then be strong enough to do so. You know, what good could you do in the world by speaking up? And I don't think that you should really talk about these things if you are not feeling like you're up to it yet, but just work towards it. Think of it as something of a goal, right? Think of it as once you get to a certain point, you could do that. And if not, maybe the trick is to go and find those people online who are talking about it and follow them and read what they're saying and listen to their podcast or, you know, watch their YouTube videos or whatever, right? And just connect with those people, even if you're just an observer first, and then later connecting. I think that's great. Very cool. So that's number five, is if you feel comfortable about talking, if you feel comfortable talking about your own experience with mental health, by all means do so. Number six, don't define a person by his or her mental illness. Wow. I'm going to read that again. Don't define a person by his or her mental illnesses. That is so, again, another great one. And I think that just as a tumor, I'll just read this here. It says, just as a tumor need not define a person, right? You wouldn't say, oh, look, there's that cancer guy, right? Although I think even in our society, I mean, you think about like a kid, you know, like a bald kid or something. Oh, it's the cancer kid, right? There's a cancer kid. It's important for us to not, or even like an ADHD kid, right? There's that ADD kid. And what do you think of when you think of a kid who has ADHD? Screaming in class, running around, being crazy, you know, unmanageable. You think of somebody with depression, right? And so if you find out that somebody has depression, or if you find out that somebody has autism, or if you find out that somebody has ADD or bipolar disorder or anxiety disorder, right? Those are all things that doesn't define the person. Just because that person has that, or anything, right? Somebody who, you know, is considering suicide, all of those sorts of things, so important that we do not let those things define who we are. And honestly, that is such a, it's something that I personally have struggled with maybe a little bit. Once I didn't find out that I had ADHD until I was 23. And when I found out, it really, you know, when you're 23, you're kind of, you know, hopefully you've kind of figured out who you are by then. But I was still kind of figuring out, you know, what I wanted to do. I hadn't made really a career choice yet. And so I was kind of just, when I found out, it really, it bonded to my identity for quite a while. And I feel like it still does. But it's been part of me to kind of pull back from that. And part of what I've been trying to do is to pull back from that and say, well, that's not who I am. I'm not that kind of a person. I mean, I am not ADHD. I am, you know, yes, I may have this, but big deal, right? I'm also all of these other things. I have all of these other qualities of, you know, my personality in my life. So, you know, we need to talk about mental disorders the way we talk about other medical disorders, says Insel. Yet we are very cautious about revealing mental illness because it will somehow define a person's competence or even suggest dangerousness. So again, we need to be able to talk about mental illness without suddenly having it being tied to a person, right? Which leads right into number seven, separate the person from the problem. You know, continuing from the last point, the experts recommended avoiding language that identifies people by only their mental health problems. So, for example, saying of someone with schizophrenia, not a schizophrenic. However, you know, some people say, you know, that autistic people actually like to be identified as autistic. And you know, maybe that's a personal preference, but regardless of what it is, respecting that personal preference is there as well. But not saying, oh, you're a depressed person, you are, you know, you're schizophrenic. That those labels, and labels really are something that can be dangerous, you know, from a psychological standpoint and from a social standpoint. And being able to talk about, you know, you wouldn't say, oh, there's cancer. Hey, there's the cancer guy, right? Like, you would say, oh, that man has cancer. That man, in the same way, that man has schizophrenia, or that man suffers from schizophrenia, or that man suffers from depression. You wouldn't say that is a depressed man, because that is tying that person's identity into their disorder, which is something that we don't want to do. They are much bigger, right? I am a much bigger individual, a much more interesting and complicated individual than just being able to say, oh, there is Zach, the ADHD guy, right? I have ADHD. Okay, well, that doesn't say anything about me. It says something about one aspect of my life. Does that make sense? Okay. Three left here. So the next one, sometimes the problem isn't that we're using the wrong words, but that we're not talking at all. Again, silence is a killer, man. Like, literally, silence is our inability to discuss mental illness, like we talked about before with suicide. It's causing deaths, people. Like, it's causing deaths, but it's also causing, you know, just people to suffer. And the problem is that nobody likes to talk about it. Why don't we like to talk about it? Now, we're going to get to the last couple here. But we're going to come back to this. Why don't people like to talk about it? And I think, honestly, it's because we take ourselves too seriously. But we'll get back to that. So number eight is, again, sometimes the problem isn't that we're using the wrong words, but that we're not talking at all. And, you know, so if you're having a hard time with it, they basically say, reach out to your friends. You know, keep it personal. If you're down, talk to somebody. Because remember that one time that your friend was down and you talked to them and they felt a little better. So reach out, support people, and talk about your emotions, get comfortable with them. We really have a hard time discussing our own emotions. And also, you know, I mean, not that we need to make everything lightly, but we'll come back to that. Our penultimate, recognize the amazing contributions of people with mental health differences. So for example, Temple Grandin, like I was saying before, she said, if it weren't for a little bit of autism, we wouldn't have any phones to talk on. She definitely describes the tech community as filled with autistic pioneers. Einstein definitely was. He did not have any language until he was 3 years old. How about Steve Jobs? I'll only mention the dead ones by name. The live ones, you'll have to look them up on the internet. Of depression, Grandin says, the organizations involved with depression need to be emphasizing how many really creative people whose books we love, whose movies we love, their arts, have had a lot of problems with depression. See, a little bit of those genetics makes you sensitive, makes you emotional, makes you sensitive, and that makes you creative in a certain way, right? And so there is a ton of connection between creativity and depression and innovation and out-of-the-box thinking and autism and, you know, having a lot of ADHD as well, just for me personally, now that I kind of have seen it, been able to live my life and then kind of pull back and see into the fishbowl, so to speak, you know, where the fish is swimming around its whole life and then one day it manages to poke its head and get up on top of the fishbowl and look back into the fishbowl. That's kind of how I felt when I found out I had ADHD. Looked back at my whole life and like, holy cow, my whole life has changed, right? I have a whole new perspective on my entire life. And being able to look at myself and say, oh, well, you know, because of my ADHD, I can see why I had these specific challenges, but also why I was really good at certain things. Why, when I got up on stage in show choir in high school, I was in my element, right? It's because I was like very high energy. I was the center of attention, which for somebody who has a really hard time feeling like they can, like there's enough attention on them in the room, or having a hard time focus their attention, being on stage and having everybody stare at me was the best thing in the world, right? And that's why, probably why I do podcasting and why I like to be, you know, on social media and all those sorts of things, is it for a similar reason. It's because I thrive in those sorts of circumstances. And I believe in part it's because of my ADHD. Finally, the last one, and I kind of hinted at this before, but the last one is humor helps. So humor, some say, is the best medicine for your brain. Says the comedian Wax, if you surround your message with comedy, you have an entree into their psyche. People love novelty, so for me, it's sort of foreplay. I'm softening them up, and then you can deliver as dark as you want. But if you whine about being a woman or being black, good luck. Everybody smells it, but it's true. People are liberated by laughing at themselves. And I have found that this, being able to laugh at yourself, is probably the biggest, for me personally at least, it is one of the biggest things for me in it, being able to just thrive and do what I can, you know, to get over this idea that I have this mental disorder in which I have to, you know, suffer through, like, whatever, man. I don't care. Do I have terrible moments all the time where my wife asks me to do something? I'm like, yeah, no problem, honey. And then I'll go downstairs and I will find, hey, there's my iPad. Awesome. And then I'll go pick it up and I'll play a game and whatever, you know, I'll start doing something and I'll be like, oh, wait a minute. What am I doing down here? I don't do this. I don't, what is this crap? And on a daily basis, that happens. I'm not even joking. You can ask my wife. On a daily basis, that sort of situation happens to me every single day. And without being able to laugh at it and say, oh, there we go again, whatever, it would be really, really challenging for me. So anyway, those are the 10 ways that we can more effectively talk about mental health and more productively talk about mental health. So I'm going to talk about them, go through them one more time. Number one, end the stigma. Number two, avoid correlations between criminality and mental illness. Three, but do correlate between mental illness and suicide. Four, avoid words like crazy or psycho. Five, if you feel comfortable talking about your own experience with mental health, by all means do so. Six, don't define a person by his or her mental illnesses. Seven, separate the person from the problem. Eight, sometimes the problem isn't that we're using the wrong words, but that we're not talking at all. Number nine, recognize the amazing contributions of people with mental health differences. And number 10, humor helps. So that's the end of our episode today for the Totally Mental show. Just one quick announcement here. Let me find my music here. I feel like we need to have a little music as we do the outro here. There we go. Okay, so just a quick announcement. The podcast will not be on iTunes for a few more weeks. This is so that we can make sure that we enter iTunes with some momentum. So in the meantime, if you found this episode helpful, you can share it with others by going to Zach Erickson, that's ZACERICKSON.com/TM002, and share the post for this page or for this episode on Facebook or Twitter. Also, I'm still collecting survey data for my 2015 audience survey. To fill out the survey, go to ZACERICKSON.com/survey2015. And finally, my next podcast will be on my life with ADHD. Kind of talked about it today, but we're going to talk about it a whole lot more next week. And if you have a question about this particular topic, please feel free to leave me a message at zacherickson.com/contact. And as well, this is a terrific way for you to cross-promote your own blog or website if you have one of those, because I'll link to it and mention it on the show as well. That has been... sorry, I'm still figuring out my ending here, but if you like to comment on this episode, please go to zacherickson.com and go to the show notes for this episode. Scroll down to the bottom where the comments are, and you know, any sort of comment, I'd love to hear the discussion from all of you as well. You can also follow me on Twitter at Zach Erickson. And until next time, keep fighting the good fight, and I will see you next week.